Shalom, good morning. This is Radio Shalom coming to you through Planet FM 104.6. Shalom, Udi.
Good morning, Joan.
Wonderful to have Udi in the studio telling us such interesting stories and history. And today you're going to talk about Jewish diaspora.
Yeah, the present situation of the Jews in diaspora. What's happening today?
Okay, so tell us.
So first of all, we have, what's the main thing that influenced the Jews in diaspora today?
What happened in the past.
True, but even more than that, what's happening in Israel? If we look on the non-Jews, that are basically, wherever there are Jews, there are more non-Jews, right? How is the non-Jewish community address the Jewish community? Does it address it as a Jewish community, as an Israeli community, or the Jewish-Israeli community? And we can see in surveys and in researches that all across the world, all over the world, there's a mix between Israelis and Jews. And local Jews, even if they haven't visited Israel once, they don't know, they don't can pin it, they cannot pin it on a map. They could, you know, not connected at all. They could be anti-Zionist as far as the surrounding concern. They will be identified almost as Israelis, if not as Israelis themselves. Today, the majority of the common culture assumes that Jews come from Israel or they have a relationship with Israel and a very strong relationship. That's why whatever happens in the Middle East influences immediately the Jewish community. You can see a rise in anti-Semitic attacks. And in, you know, in the physical security of Jews, every time there is something bad in Israel happening. So the first thing, even before we're going to start talking, you know, about the Jewish systems and about the Jewish community and all those important things, the first thing to understand is that the physical security of the Jews is stronger than ever, for sure, but it's also influenced more than ever by what's happening in Israel. Unlike the 60s, for example, or the 70s. Because there's so many years passed since Israel was established, the young generation doesn't remember in reality. Without it, I'm talking about non-Jews now, so they assume that's the same thing. The second thing that influenced Jewish communities all over the world is their socioeconomic, political power, position, structure. You know, the Jewish, you know, vote, in quotation marks, or the Jewish influential on the politics, on the elite, is not necessarily how the Jewish community in that place is perceived. And it's not necessarily a point of strength. You could have a Jewish president, but it doesn't mean that the Jews are in possession of more power. So we can see a differentiation between individuals and the community. Again, something that's very new. In Argentina, you could see a Jewish president in the recent press. In Peru, you have a person marries to a Jewish lady. You have Jewish mayors all around Latin America, and governors in North America.
You have Venezuela, too.
Well, it's a very different story. But that doesn't echoes back to the statue of the community. The community can stay very empowered or very unpowered, depends on the... So there's individualization of the Jewish politics, whether in the past, even in the beginning, in the middle, in the 60s, in the 70s, the Jewish politics tried to also help the Jewish community. Not always succeeding, right? But they see themselves...
They identify.
Exactly. Today it's not necessarily the case. Even when they identify themselves as Jews, they don't necessarily identify themselves as a part of the community. So, and you can see New Zealand, the prime minister is from a Jewish descent. He doesn't identify with a Jewish as a Jew, and also he doesn't impact the community at all. Okay, so there's almost no impact by Jewish politicians.
And he certainly doesn't practice tikkun olam.
Definitely, that's a political question. I'm not going into that. Another thing that's influencing the Jewish world today is how, if positive, is the Jewish experience in the community. There's a drop globally in the percent in the number of volunteers in organization. There's a drop globally in the percent of people that donate money. And again, that's a part of individualization. People donate to individuals. People do their Judaism as an individual in their home with their kids, in reading a book, going to the movies, advocating for something, not through the community. There's less of a need to donate a lot of money to the community. So the communities are becoming weaker and weaker all over the world. Something happens everywhere. Another thing that's happening and impacting everybody is that what is the relationship between the diaspora and Israel? It's the same as it was 20 years ago. It's different. We see a democratization of the relationship. In the past, most donations to Israel were going to things like UIA, Jewish Agency, WZO, and so on, JNF. And from there, it was directly to Israel. Since the 60s, you can see a drop of the money that the UIA gives to Israel relatively to other Jewish communities. So a bigger percentage of the money goes today to other Jewish communities. For example, New Zealand Jewish community receives money from the WZO and from the Jewish Agency rather than giving.
To support the...
the needs of the local community. Exactly. So the relationship is... if the relationship in the beginning was the diaspora gives money to Israel, today Israel invests money in the diaspora, and also the diaspora gives money. When it gives money to Israel, it gives to a specific cause. Again, individualization.
The children.
But it's not even children. It's a specific home. Mm-hmm. It's a specific NGO. Things are changing because people want to see where the dollar is going to. And the same thing exactly is happening when the... when Israel is investing or giving money donation to the diaspora. They want to see where it goes. It's not, you know, blind money, do whatever you want with. That doesn't exist almost anywhere.
It's tagged.
It's always tagged. Another thing is that we can see that is changing globally is there's a drop of Jewish people, Jewish students in the universities and colleges. You know, until the 90s, Jewish communities were globally more represented than their percentage in the universities. And in particularly in the elite universities, there's a big drop in there. Today, it's more like the average of that country. The joke in North America was that no matter how many Jews are in the class, the speaker and the excellent achiever that speaks in the graduation will be a Jew. Today, there's the same jokes on Asians and not on the Jews. And that's not to show anything about Asians or Jews, because it's jokes, but it is it is echoing something that changed in the culture. Now, that goes... there's more than that. It's not only that there's less Jewish in the academics, but also in the cultural elite. In general, Jewish communities were hoped to see themselves as elite. Today, they might be, some of them, financially elite. Most of the time, it's also not true. And they are actually, today, there are more Jewish poor in New York City, for example. The poverty among the Jews is stronger than to be above average income. Something that was unbelievable a decade ago. Or not a decade, a generation ago. A huge flip of the situation. However, the cost to be a Jew is more expensive. It's a paradox. The Jewish school is more expensive. If it's a day school or if it's a Sunday school, you need to pay money for that. You didn't always have to pay money for those things. Be a member in a synagogue, be a member in a federation, be a member in a club, in a JCC, in a this and a that. All it things costs. That cost a lot of money. To get a child all the way in Jewish education system in Melbourne or in New York or in Europe, it's about $1 million. If you want Jewish education from the day he's born to the end of university, if you include regular education to it, private education a year could be all the way between $10,000 to $25,000 a year. For a, imagine a family with four children. It's $1 million for a family. $1 million.
So only the very wealthy can afford.
Only the very wealthy can afford, but there's less and less wealthy in general. And also it brings Judaism to a type of a consumerism. They consume a Jewish project rather they are a member of a Jewish organization.
When you pay someone rather than to contribute.
Exactly. When you pay $10,000, you don't expect to get a phone call because you volunteer as a teacher. Mm. You expect for the most professional thing. There's more than that. Jewish identity becomes a matter of choice. You can choose whatever you want to do on most places in the world today. Jews are less labeled as dual identification because there's so many other diasporas, right? In the past, there was only a Jewish diaspora. Today, there's 35 million Jewish and 35 million Chinese as a Chinese diaspora, 9 million Indians as an Indian diaspora. There's 8 million Jews as a Jewish diaspora. There's 1 million Jews as a Jewish diaspora. 22 million African Americans, 4 million and a half Iranians, 3 million and a half Irish, 14 million Kurds, and I can continue. Almost every nation today has a diaspora. So there's a lot of people that also identify themselves with their origin country. So there's less of that, and there's less barriers because of that to be a part of the general society, because the society is more pluralist. There's more and more, that brings to the fact that there's more and more marriage with a non-Jewish partner. And that brings to the fact that there's less Jewish background to the next generation. Okay? There's more, the fact that there's more individualism brings all sorts of social norms and eclectic rituals in the Jewish practice. There's no mainstream. You know, today you can count 25 Jewish streams. Until 30 years ago, there were 3-4 main Jewish streams. Today, there's a gazillion. Inside progressive, orthodox, liberal, conservative. Each of them are divided to about 20 streams themselves. In general, the traditional family unit is weak. There's a lot of single parents, same-sex families, divorced families, and so on. Now, I don't think those things are negative as they are, but the Jewish establishments, in general, tend to look at those as a different from the traditional family. So they are less relatable. There's less Jewish education. There's more alternatives in general. So all of those things can tell us that the situation in the diaspora is bad, negative. However, it doesn't really the case. We have, on the other side of the spectrum, today you can be Jewish wherever you are. In the past, you had to be a member in a synagogue. Today, with the internet, with the phones, with the aerial transportation, you can live very far from a Jewish community and still be a part of a Jewish group of learning. You have people today, I know specifically in Habo, that are learning with people in North America and in Israel online Jewish stuff.
They've got a Jewish yeshiva on there.
You can have all sorts of things without leaving your home, so you can be Jewish. Secondly, while nationality is going down, ethnicity is going up all over the world in all identifications. So the Jewish ethnicity is going up. You know, rise in Jewish culture, in Jewish films, in poems, in songs, in food. Things that are not religious, they are not national, but they are important.
But they're identifiable.
Exactly. You have in most places that are Jews, you have a Jewish community, you have roughly an equal society. If you have an equal society, You don't have to be in the elite in order to be separate. So the fact that the Jews were in the elite in the past was a tool to maintain a community, because there was an elite and then there were all the others. Today, the society is so fragmented, but is equal nevertheless, that you can be a part of the community without being the elite. The fact that Israel is no longer something that people question, meaning it won many wars after the Six Days War, after 73 war, you know, after the 25, as people see Israel as something that will always be there. And that's a strength. It's something that makes the identification stronger. The Holocaust memory is today a global memory. There's a United Nations Day to remember the Holocaust. You know, the fight against anti-Semitism is a global struggle today, with Jews and non-Jews. The sense of joint history, because we live in a post-modern world. So it's after post-modern. So people, again, are going back to the history. And the fact that people are reading so many, there's an influx in history books and narrative books and so on, is because people want to know about those things. And so
you can
find out many more things. Exactly. You don't need to go to the library. You can just Google whatever you're interested in. So there are more opportunities to preserve Jewish identity.
Yeah, I've seen even Jewish singles across marriages through the internet.
Exactly. Very, very successful. Now, and you can see all those things that, are giving us a very mixed picture. So what is the situation in the diaspora today? We can see, if we look on the numbers, there's only two Jewish communities that are growing in the world. And they are Germany and Australia.
What?
And both because immigration and not because of fertility rates. Both because immigration. All other Jewish communities all over the world are decreasing because of low fertility rates and immigration and assimilation. Of course, there's another huge exception, which is not a Jewish community, but the Jewish states, and that's Israel. In Israel, they suspect that within a decade or two decades, we'll have about 12 million, almost doubling the population.
Because the Orthodox have big families?
No, definitely not because of that. Actually, there's a drop in the Orthodox fertility rate. In the ultra-Orthodox, rather, not in the Orthodox, the Haredis. There's a high fertility rate in Israel is the global exception to the West. All over the West, the more wealthy you are, the less kids you have. In Israel, it's the opposite. The more wealthy you are as a family, there's a bigger chance for more kids. As a trend. So we can see that secular families and Orthodox families and traditional families in Israel today have three kids or 3 point even, point something. In the past, it was 2 point.
So you'll have to catch up.
and we can see that in Europe, it's a drop all the time. Because in a Jewish tradition, tells us that if you have more money, it gives you more opportunities to give your kids. It's a cultural thing, even if you're not religious. Now, so the number of the Jewish population in Israel is growing, but the number of the Jewish population in diaspora is actually decreasing.
You say except for Germany and Australia.
In Australia, but that's because of immigration.
Yeah.
People immigrate both to Australia and both to Germany because of good job market. And in Australia, it's because as a country, Australia encourage immigration. There's a big immigration to that in general, not only of Jews. Jews are a part of the global trend. Germany specifically gave until 2005 special social basket, let's say, welfare and financial benefits for Jewish immigrants.
As reparations.
Yes, exactly. But those two, it's in their diaspora. So it's from a diaspora community to diaspora community. It doesn't change the general number of the Jews. So if you look only on the numbers, we can say that the diaspora is decreasing. But if you look on something else, if you look on activities, then you can see that there's a growth in activities in the diaspora. There's more and more things happening. Now, I say things in purpose because they are less and less organized. The communities, the synagogue, the federations find it more and more difficult to organize good events, but there are things happening.
Like what?
Like a chavura meeting for a Friday night service at somebody's house. Like a museum giving an exhibition of something Jewish with a Jewish artist. Like a cocktail party for Hanukkah. Private.
So it's spontaneous.
Spontaneous. Grassroots. Now, those things today, after a decade of grassroots movements in the Jewish diaspora, we can see are already starting to organize themselves. And it will be interesting to see in 10, 15 years, is the grassroots just became another organization, or is it actually a revolution?
Or a rebirth.
Or a rebirth of the older organizations in a new, you know, brand. Could be. But we can see that there's a growth in diaspora in that aspect. We can also see that in the diaspora, you know, marrying out of Judaism, some people are saying we need to see it as marrying in to Judaism. Because on one hand, you have less Jews as a number. On the other hand, you have more Jewish households. How is that possible? If you have, let's say, 4 Jews globally, and they only marry each other. So now you have 2 families, you still have 4 Jews, right? Now let's say you have 4 Jews and 100% marries out. So you still have 4 Jews, but you have 4 Jewish families. And that's a big difference. Because what do you count? Do you count the houses that have some Jewish events or, you know, something in them? Or do you count individuals that were born Jewish? It's not the same. Do you count the fact that... how do you count kids? Because, for example, the average fertility rate in Jewish families in the West, not in Israel, with several exceptions, is 2 children. Which means if you have 2 parents, they have 2 children. After a generation, there's no increase, but there's no decrease. Okay? The number sustains itself. Now, let's say you have those 4 Jews marrying each other. They had 4 children altogether because you have 2 families, right? Each with 2 children. So after a generation, you still have 4 Jews. Sustain itself. Now, let's say you have all of them marrying out, right? So now you have 4 families. Each of them has 2 children. That gives us 8. Right? It's a little bit of math, a little bit tricky. So we have 8 children. Now, we also know that after 100 years of statistical and demographic researches, that about 50% of kids in interfaith families will be Jewish. Because about half goes with the father, half goes with the mother. That's roughly the statistics. So we know that if you have 8 children, half of them will stay Jewish the next generation. That's how many, Joan?
Tell me.
4. Half of 8 is 4. It's not a tricky question. So even if all Jews are marrying out, after a generation, you have the same number exactly of Jews.
So you haven't lost in the long run.
You haven't lost in the long run. Now,
and many come back after doing genealogy.
And many come after. But, you know, the 50% roughly count them as well. So it's a big question. I'm not sure I'm convinced, because, you know, there's 3 kinds of lies, Churchill said. There's, you know, a white lie, blunt lie, and statistics. So I'm not sure I'm convinced by the statistical trick I've just did. I've convinced myself, but for sure, it gives you something to think about. It's not sure that the trend of marrying out will necessarily mean a decrease in the next generation. We don't know. We will only know in 30 years. We'll need to wait and see, right? But for sure, we can see a definite change in the diaspora. If we compare the diaspora today, because all the reasons I've said in the beginning, negative reasons and the positive reasons. They all show a different reality to the diaspora in the beginning of the 21st century. And it is a great mystery what will grow from it.
So that's something to look forward to be afraid of.
Well, it's a good question. You know, when Napoleon was on the edge of Russia, they asked a rabbi, should we say Hagomer? Should we be thankful for Napoleon, or we should say prayer for the Tsar, you know, against Napoleon? And he said, and we have one rabbi that said, we need to say Hagomer, we need to be thankful. And we have another rabbi said, we need to pray for the Tsar. You know, we'll always have...
different opinions.
Pessimistic and optimistic. The pessimistic approach will say, and there are a lot of demographics that are claiming that, and rabbis and leaders, that the diaspora is declining and will, within 3 or 4 generations, disappear, with a few minor exceptions of big Jewish communities in several cities. The diaspora will virtually disappear as a Jewish diaspora. There will be remnants of it, but there won't be a diaspora as it is today, as a vibrant, viable diaspora. And Israel will be the only center, with a few, you know, antennas elsewhere. And the very optimistic are saying that within a generation we'll see a huge growth in the Jewish diaspora, and there will be a new Jewish renaissance that we cannot even predict, but will be similar to what happened when, you know, in the 20s and in before that, when the mass immigration from Eastern Europe finished. So it's a good question, what will happen in the next generation. The truth probably lies somewhere in the middle.
Well, I think that if instead of trying to keep people out, we accepted people in, that perhaps we would be different but still the same.
Definitely.
So thank you, Udi, so much.
Thank you,
John. For all that you've taught us. I'm really grateful to you, and thank you for listening. Don't forget to listen next Sunday at 10 past 10. And if you've missed this program, you can always hear it for the following week on www.planetaudio.org.nz/Radio Shalom.